Hello, and welcome back to episode 3 of The Good, The Bad, and The Backlog. I am your host, Adam, and once again, we are joined by my co-host, the yin to my yang, the Tom to my Jerry, the pickles to my radish sandwich, Kieran, hello.
Man, that's the best intro so far. Hello.
The speed bump to my life, I don't know.
the gravy to my Yorkshire pudding.
The gravy boat to my thick man sauce. too far? Okay.
Maybe a little bit.
All right. Well, too bad. I'm keeping it in.
Fair.
All right. Cool. So, welcome back. And let's start off with a catch up since it's been a week.
It's been a solid week. Yep.
Yep. I know you've been busy playing this game and doing other things. What has been going on?
Well, honestly, this week has been very, very uneventful, really. I've just been kind of doing ordinary, boring life tasks, such as going to work and coming back home, making dinner, eating it, and then playing games. So I wish there was something interesting I could talk about.
What did you make for dinner?
Okay, now we're talking, man.
we're getting to the juicy bits.
a delicious miso soup the other day with veggies and miso.
You mean miso?
And that's what I had for the entire week. No, I don't know, man. I had salads. I had a good range of stuff. It's been a truly colourful week for food. Culinary delights all around.
It sounds amazing.
Well, honestly, it was maybe the best week of my life. I can't possibly state how fantastic it was. But anyway, my week. What about yours?
Some big talk there. Well, I have been, since we're talking about food, I have been on the biggest junk food binge for the last week.
Oh, man.
And I feel really run down and sick. But other than that, I feel fine.
What are we talking? Like, are we talking fast food, McDonald's style, or are you just eating like tons of sugary shit and chocolate?
All of the above. I like went to the grocery store. I bought a whole bunch of like Tim Tams and Oreos and chocolate biscuits and chocolate. And then I've been like basically having McDonald's or KFC or pizza like most nights of the week because I'm quote unquote bulking right now.
Bulking is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I'm convincing myself it's a dirty bulk, which is like making it okay for me to eat all this shit. But
yeah, that sounds like proper science right there.
Yeah, like bodybuilders do it all the time, right?
That's right. They just go out and eat tons of junk and sugar and fat and stuff, and that's good for you. It'll convert itself into muscle. This is how you get ripped and shredded.
I have noticed some gains, but I don't think it's enough to account for the amount of shit that I've eaten that is going to appear in my stomach very soon.
Yes, it's gains that is appearing elsewhere.
Yeah.
Just big stomach gains. Yes.
Anyway, that's my story.
That's impressive, though. I feel bad after having like a cheat day after eating biscuits and crisps and stuff. So a week is, I'd be feeling pretty damn shit, I'll be honest.
Yeah, look, I normally do like one cheat day every month or something like that. But this time around, I was like, oh, I'm not getting many gains. So maybe I'll just try a dirty bulk for
you've really
a weekend.
Just gone off the deep end.
Yeah, and then it was supposed to be a weekend, and then it stretched into an entire week.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, back on the normal eating habits tomorrow.
But you've been doing, like, your standard exercise, right? So, it's not just endless calories, no burning off any calories.
I've upped the exercise, but I've cut out the cardio because I was like, I've got all these extra calories so they can, you know, repair my muscles after lifting heavy, so we'll see. Oh, man, I don't know if it's working or not.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like go on the internet and Google things until I get an answer that I like.
Yeah.
Which is normally...
That's definitely a really bad way to do it, but yeah, it might make you feel better at least.
There's like, you can basically Google any question like, is it okay to go on a cheat week?
Sugar is good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll find an article which is like, the good effects of sugar and why you should be okay having a cheat meal. Or yeah. a cheat week, or whatever. And then it's always like positive affirmation stuff, which basically just says, it's okay to make really terrible choices of your life. You're not going to have any repercussions. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice way of living, but really it's actually a really, really terrible way of living. And
it's kind of delusional.
I think so, yeah. But hey-ho. It is what
it is,
eh?
Speaking of delusional, let's talk about our game of the week this week.
That's an excellent segue.
Yeah. I practiced that one for like the last 20 minutes.
And what is the game?
The game, as discussed last episode, is Deadly Premonition.
Excellent. And
for...
And...
Wait,
right.
Probably so... say it's for the... Originally came out on Xbox 360, 2010. Also available on PlayStation 3 as a director's cut, PC as a director's cut, and then re-released on Nintendo Switch as... actually, it wasn't the director's cut version, it was the original version, but with some of the director's cut's changes.
That's right. Wasn't it called Deadly Premonition Origins?
That's the one, and that's the one I played, plus I went back and played the 360 one as well.
Okay, and is that just the original or the director's cut?
The director's cut isn't available on the 360, so it was the original.
Ooh, okay, interesting.
Yes.
So I've been playing the director's cut on PS3.
Right.
So
some would say the worst version of all.
Oh, no, really?
Second worst. Yeah.
I thought the actual original version on PS3 and Xbox was considered the worst.
No, the director's cut... So, the PS3 version is the director's cut. I think there was a non-director's cut release, but that was exclusive only to Asian territories.
Okay.
And then, so, I watched this whole video. There was this guy that... Actually, you know what? I'll promote him right now, because before I forget his name, it was some... Hikikomori Media on YouTube has a Deadly Premonition retrospective video, which goes for an hour and 46 minutes, which I watched today... and it basically also breaks down like every single difference between all the different versions. So, and ranks them. So the PS3 version was second to last, with the PC version on Steam being the worst by far. So, if you want to play this game, don't play it on Steam. And the best version was the Xbox version. So,
okay.
Yeah. And the Switch version is somewhere in between. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely got some problems with it, but. Whether we go into them now or later, maybe we'll start with some good stuff, perhaps.
Yeah, let's save that for later and actually delve into what the game is and what it's all about.
Yeah, so this game is Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks the game. Actually, fun fact, before we get into that too much, I actually saw this other video which said that the game was delayed because it was too much like Twin Peaks and the producers of Twin Peaks were attempting to sue the developers because it was too similar. So, they had to go back and change some stuff.
Oh, my God. I wonder what they actually changed.
If you listen to Hikikomori Media's video...
Okay, I've got to watch this video. I'm curious. It sounds really interesting.
It is really interesting, but as a snapshot, they basically changed the character models of two of the characters, and there's the two twin characters that appear in this sort of other world. Oh, geez, my throat just made this gurgling noise.
I fucking heard that too. I thought it was like some audio glitch. Got the fucking xenomorph coming out your stomach.
It's a fucking ghost from The Grudge. So... In Twin Peaks, there's this kind of midget guy who like talks backwards and does this weird creepy dance. And there's these two kid characters in Deadly Premonition. In the original version of the game before they changed it, it was two dwarfs in a red room. So it was way too similar to the dwarf in Twin Peaks. Anyway, I digress. Let's get back on track.
Yeah. Well, it's an open world game in a town called Greenville. And it is very, very similar to the Twin Peaks setting. So you've got like a logging town. What sort of era is it set in? I guess it is modern day, like 2000, early 2000s to 2010 sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it would have been present day for the day it was released, because the main character at the very start is using a smartphone or talking on a mobile phone or driving a muscle car.
I guess because it's set in such like a backwards territory that it all seems a little bit old-fashioned, but that's just because it's because of the nature of the area.
Yeah, but which is kind of true to life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is quite a nice setting if the graphics weren't so shit.
Yeah.
So the game starts with your character, FBI Special Agent Francis York Morgan, and he's coming into Greenville to investigate the murder of a girl from the village called Laura Palmer. That's a joke.
Yeah, okay.
Anna Graham.
My controlling nature was like, no, that's incorrect.
Oh man, it just starts off so strange. You crash your car. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how you crash your car. I really should remember, considering it was like a few days ago that I saw this.
It was kind of ripped off from Silent Hill. There's someone in the road and then he swerves the car and then it crashes. Basically same as Silent Hill.
Was it the raincoat killer in the road?
Yes, it was the raincoat killer.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about him later.
Yes.
So you crash your car, and then you have to go through this weird freaking dungeon-type thing in the woods, filled with zombies, and it's very strange. And then once you've got through this, by turning on generators and stuff, you meet the sheriff and his deputy on the road, as you were supposed to meet them earlier on, to go into Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, what happens next?
Okay, well, in a nutshell, your character, York, is going to this town because of the murder of the girl. But it's because he's also investigating a bunch of serial killings in the rest of America, which is similar enough to the killing of this girl in Greenville. So he's going to basically investigate and see if they're all linked. So yeah, he crashes the car, meets up with the police. They basically go and check out the scene of the crime. They have an autopsy, all this sort of stuff. And once it's found out that the murder has the same modus operandi, is the official word.
Oh, that's right.
The same MO as all the other killings. He then takes over the investigation and then has to basically talk to all the different townspeople and solve the crime. So that's the setup and the premise. And there are a hell of a lot of twists and turns, and it's a good old-fashioned murder mystery set up from the beginning with some really wacky comedy.
Yes.
Put in the Twin Peaks style. So I think so the official genre for Deadly Premonition is survival horror, but it is not like any survival horror game I've ever played before. So
I have to say it is absolutely hilarious at times.
Yeah.
And the comedy is maybe my favorite aspect of the whole game.
Yeah. Fun fact though, the actual survival horror sections, like the shooting sections, was added as an afterthought because apparently, according to the game director or developer or whoever, whose name is Swery, Swery. Yes.
Or Swery65.
Yeah, Swery65. I'm assuming that's the year he was born, but
maybe.
Anyway, so that was added as an afterthought because the director or a production person or somebody said that Americans need shooting in their games, so that would make it more appealing to a Western audience. And it's hands down the worst part of the game for me is
it's so
the shooting section.
It's so tedious. Yeah.
You know what? There is actually one other part in the game that I hate more than that, but those whole sections should be, like, if it was removed, it would have no Like, it wouldn't negatively affect the game at all. In fact, it would make the game a lot more tolerable and
I think I
enjoyable.
Can probably guess what you're going to say.
For the worst part.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with a dog?
I think it might, and maybe following.
Oh, yes. Okay, fine. You got it. That was five. We'll talk about that later and what we liked and didn't like. Remind me about that, because I actually have that written down in my notes here. Is like, this is the worst part of the game. I hate this.
Okay. I'll try and watch you.
Yeah, so there are a lot of similarities initially with Twin Peaks, but also with Silent Hill. So these shooting sections are kind of like in Silent Hill, where you go to the Rust dimension or like the Demon dimension. And in this game, when you go to this other world, it is so completely disconnected story-wise from everything else that it feels completely out of place. And even after finishing the game, there really, like, you look back on it, there really is no way that this ties into the broader scheme of it, and it actually winds up making the story a lot more confusing than it needs to be, because the whole time I'm like, what the hell are these shadows? Why are we in this other world? It doesn't make sense to me, and it confuses everything.
I completely agree, and it's like, am I the only one who's witnessing this? Is this just some kind of hallucination that I'm going to having in my head? And it's not. You find that out later, it's not.
Yeah. There is one other character that experiences it.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't exactly get any explanations of it. And it's so strange, and it's really annoying and just not very fun.
Yeah. I got used to it, but those sections as a whole, I wish weren't in there. And the fact that, like, if this one other character later in the game didn't experience the other world, I could dismiss those sections as being, like, you know, metaphorical, or it's in your character's head or whatever. It's like,
I would have preferred that. If there were just some kind of way that York dealt with the situation, some part of his investigative process.
Yeah.
Which, like, you know, it wouldn't be the most batshit insane thing, because he is a very quirky character.
Yeah. I could buy that.
Yeah,
but
then introducing it to another character later on and showing that it is actually happening in some respect, it does kind of ruin that a little bit.
Yeah, because you don't get answers for certain things. Like, this other world, because it's so similar to Silent Hill, you know instinctively through Silent Hill that is a part of that town, and that's, like, you don't ever really get too much. Well, I suppose you do get an explanation, but that's just part of Silent Hill. It's expected in those games that this town has this function and mechanic. But whereas in Deadly Premonition, it's not really tied to the town, and it's not sort of set up where these things are what happened in this town, because I think York actually says the first time that he sees these creatures is that it's something that he's experienced before. I'm pretty sure he has some sort of familiarity with it, like it's happened before to him.
Yeah.
So if it's not specific to Greenvale, then what the hell is it doing there, and why is it not explained?
Yeah, exactly. And why is there not, like, more shock about it each time, or talk about it?
Yeah.
But it definitely, when you said that it felt like more of an afterthought, and that's why it's considered a survival horror game, whereas before it would be just like an investigative Shenmue type game.
Yeah.
It definitely feels disjointed and is really not a good asset of the game.
I would... Okay, look, I love this game. I'll absolutely defend this game, but these sections are so annoying. And if they were taken out and the game was just the investigation, I would like this game 10 times more.
Yes. The one good thing about them is that they are incredibly easy, and you can pretty much run past all the monsters if you really wanted to. Just get to the key, unlock the door, and leave, more or less.
Yeah, I figured that out the second time I played it.
Yeah, so it is bearable if you just want to experience the story and the other things in the game, like the side quests and characters, then just run through them as quick as you can.
Yeah. Oh, and it's also tied to another incredibly frustrating mechanic, which is the quick time events, which all of them almost exclusively happen in the other world.
Yeah.
And goddamn, they were so annoying. They're probably one of the worst, like, quick time events I've ever experienced.
They are so shit, and
they happen so quickly too.
they really do come out of nowhere. And half the time, it's when the like main baddie of the game is just appearing out of a corner, smacking you with his axe, or you have to do these ridiculous running sequences. They are, I think they are the worst thing in the game. Those running sequences are maybe one of the worst features of any game I've ever played. I cannot believe that anyone would find them enjoyable. So bad.
I hated them.
It doesn't make any sense. So to describe them, the screen kind of splits into two screens. You get one in the bottom right, which is the vision or the viewpoint from the killer who's chasing you, and then the other side of the screen is facing your character's face as he's running from the killer.
Yeah, like you're running towards the camera, but you're not actually in control of the character. You're just using the left analog stick and going left to right to move it like a quick.
You're basically just following the prompts, and you have no control because you can't really see what you're doing. Yeah. But eventually, you might run into a door. You have to press open. You have to like move your analog stick left to right to run forward, and it's so stupid. It made me so angry. And there's one of the final boss features that before it's kind of its final form, dare I say. And oh my fucking God. Because you have, if you want to get, do one of the side quests, which is kind of a boss fights in the other world sort of thing, you have to go through the final bosses again. And oh my God, I've tried it twice now and I died both times. I don't know why, but...
Say what now? What's this?
Do you know how there's those side missions to go to the other world? There's the maps.
Are there bosses in those?
Yeah. The third one, instead of going to other world locations, you basically just replay the final bosses. You replay... replay the final bosses.
That's basically weird. I didn't have that one in mind. Maybe that's a director's cut edition.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating as fuck, because those bosses are shit.
Yeah, when I played it, though, none of those things made me ever replay the bosses, so thankfully it was, like, one and done with me until my second playthrough.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting, though, because in mine, I completed almost all of the side quests and tried to get as close to 1,000 gamer points as I could for the Xbox achievements.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I didn't experience that, so that's interesting.
Well, it's not fun.
Okay, so the quick time mechanics, all that stuff, fucking annoying. The other world stuff, fucking annoying. What else have we got mechanically? Oh, okay, so there's this other thing as well. So because it's open world and everything is running on a schedule, you're locked out of side quests unless it's a certain time of day, because all the NPCs are, you know, functioning on their own time as well. But I find that the time in the actual open world is so slow to pass that you have to make use of your cigarettes, which is your way of like speeding up the clock, is to use consumables, which is the cigarettes, to have, you know, make the time tick faster by.
Yes.
And the real world and the open world is also dictated, the side quests are also dictated by the weather. So certain characters won't appear in certain sections if it's raining, and the weather mechanics are always random as well. So if you're like trying to get a side quest done and this character doesn't appear in this place at this time unless it's raining, you could like wind up sleeping, like using the bed to sleep 12 hours at a time just to like continually get a day where it's not raining, and you're like, just give me the goddamn rain. Like, I want to get this side quest done.
Yeah, it's not the best, but it's also nothing I really too worried about. The fact that you can actually just skip time makes it a little bit more bearable.
It's so frustrating though. Like at one point I needed to meet this character by the tree where Anna's character was murdered, and she only appears there when it's raining. I skipped through 7 days and it didn't rain at all. And
oh my God.
I got to the point where my character had so many flies around him because he hadn't changed his clothes in 7 days.
What actually happens when you become, I was going to say soiled, when your clothes are dirty? What happens? Do you get like weird statements from characters or anything?
No, I never saw any statements from any other characters, but flies appear and just circle around your character. Like,
oh, you're right, okay.
Did you never get to that point?
No, I was pretty regimented with my changing of clothes. I pretty much changed them every time I went to sleep.
Did you shave as well? Because
yeah, I shaved. Grows. Yeah, whenever it said, like, no problem, or looks good or whatever, I just thought, yeah, fine. And whenever the stubble appeared, I was like, it's got to go.
Yeah, no, I do love, though, that they added that in, which is, so if you don't change your clothes after, I think it's 24 hours, they become dirty and then flies start circling around you. And at this point where I had skipped through 7 days, I had so many flies that I was starting to lose frames per second. It was making the game chug.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. I do love the clothes thing because you can buy some suits. Like the pink one, which will say this is increases your sex appeal, and I feel like it's purely visual. There is no sex appeal. There is none of these actual features. It has no bearing on anything in the game. But it is just quite hilarious. What?
So there are I don't know how many of the side quests you finished, but there are certain suits where you get additional health and your stamina bar also gets bigger, but I found that because the combat is so easy anyway, it makes zero difference.
All right. Well, I had no idea about that. Interesting.
Yeah, they're like only maybe 3 out of all of them has some sort of change in your stats.
All right. Okay.
I don't know how the sex appeal one would change anything. I don't think that has any change at all to gameplay or mechanics.
No. It just boosts my morale when I'm playing. Be like, yeah, I'm looking sexy tonight.
Yeah. still on mechanics, because there's a lot of talk about this game. It's got a lot of different features and a lot of them are broken. The other main thing that you'll be experiencing in this game is driving. Tell us a bit about how the cars handle, my friend.
Oh man, it's like a matchbox car, man. It's really not very fun. It's super frustrating because the turning is shit. The speed is remarkably slow considering how far you often have to go. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're in the police cars and you've got a boost, but the boost turns on the sirens, which is fine, but the sound effects are so annoying. there was a point when I was just driving to like Harry's mansion or something, and
That is a long drive too.
It's a long drive, and when you drive, the sounds coming from the car is just this like monotone drone. There is no variation in the type of rev. Yeah. Oh my god. It's the sort of thing that you don't really care about, or you wouldn't think you'd care about, but the more you hear this sound, just drives you so insane. So often, yeah, I just muted the whole thing and just played a podcast.
Nice. Fuck.
But yeah, the actual driving mechanics themselves, they're fine. I guess you can drive reasonably well. The handbrake
is
shit. Let's
be honest, they're not fine.
Well, when I say fine, I just mean like you can get from point A to point B, but it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
And God bless the fast travel, which you may miss entirely.
Yeah, pro tip for any people that intend to play this game, do the George side quest as soon as possible. So as soon as you have control of George in the police station, go and find his dumbbell and return it to him. And then on a rainy night after 2100 hours, go to his house, because if you give him a certain flower, he will give you a radio which lets you fast travel to any location you've been to before. So that was a godsend, and I recommend everyone do it as soon as possible.
Yes, absolutely. But
you will miss out on some good conversations, though, of... you know what? We've missed a really important part of this.
Zach!
Yes, Zach. So, rewind. Agent York Morgan has a quote-unquote invisible friend called Zach, who he talks to. So, Zach is kind of like a stand-in for the player. But it's also... I don't know how far you got into Twin Peaks, because you said you're going to watch some, but...
I got 3 episodes in. So, I've experienced Diane.
Okay, yeah. So Diane is a character in Twin Peaks who is Agent Cooper's secretary or something like that, and he basically records all these conversations to her via like a tape recorder, and then sends it to her to note take or whatever, or like send him shit. And in the original series in the 90s, I think it was, Diane as a character never appeared. So everybody was theorizing that she was a figment of his imagination. So they've taken that and then put that in this game where Agent York actually does have an imaginary friend who he talks to. So like, I thought that was really clever.
I really like the whole Zack story is really good. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
I love that. We'll talk more about that in the spoiler talk towards the end.
Yeah.
But it's funny though, because they didn't reboot. So they rebooted Twin Peaks as a continuation in 2017, I think it was, or 2018.
Yeah.
And they actually did cast Diane as a character now. So she is an actual person. Yeah. Oh. Anyway, fun fact. So if you're driving in the car, after certain story sections, a little prompt will appear while you're just driving along, which says press A or cross to talk. And then Agent York will just have these conversations with Zack, and it would be about like punk rock music that he likes or movies that they've seen. And it's all really well written and really interesting. So
it's really, it's really good. It's the way that the driving scenes can be a little bit more bearable, because
yeah,
otherwise, you know, you've got nothing to do rather than just go forward. But then he talks about films from the 80s, like Attack of the Killer Tomato or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And his favorite John Williams scores and stuff like that. How he likes something better than Star Wars. It's pretty funny. And it's definitely a good feature. It makes everything a little bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, it's just like one of those quirks of this game that makes it so much more enjoyable. Like it just gives character
to the game, where otherwise it would be bland.
That's exactly what this game does best, is it's a unique experience, and it's fun and it's funny, and it's not really anything that you've experienced before. And even though all these other sections are massively broken, it somehow works.
I would just say, I think there was some intent to make this game seem quirky and broken as a way to make it unique. I think there was definitely a kind of goal to make it seem clunky in some aspects. Like, it definitely wouldn't be as loved if the controls were perfect, and if everything was just flawless, like a AAA EA game from nowadays, you know, which is just kind of generic. Mm. Everything's fine. You can't really complain about the controls, but there's something not quite, I don't know.
You can complain about the 360 controls because the original game has tank controls.
Yeah, I did hear about that. Fortunately, the director's cut on PS3 didn't, and I have no complaints with the running around or that sort of thing. That's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think it was on purpose in some extent.
So that video I saw, it said that the game was originally planned to be released on PlayStation 2 and 360.
Right, so okay.
It was made with PlayStation 2 in mind, and as the game got delayed further and further and had to make all these changes, apparently the budget wasn't there for them to make any changes to the engine itself or the graphics. That's one explanation for why it's so buggy.
It's very buggy, and admittedly the graphics I would put on like a high scale PS2 game.
Yeah.
They are really not very good.
It kind of, like, some character models look really good, really okay.
I thought Emily looked really good. And then compare her to Anna. Mm. Oh, my God. It's fucking terrifying.
She's supposed to be the most beautiful girl in the town, and she looks like fucking dog shit. Like,
dog shit that's been melted.
I've had nightmares about Anna.
And the fact that she's constantly laughing and smiling is something quite creepy about that.
Yeah. I love that Deputy Emily looks exactly like Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive. So I wonder if that was intentional as well.
It's without doubt intentional. It's funny because at the start of the game, it's like any of the characters in the game that might resemble real people is completely coincidental. It's like, no, it's not. That's definitely Naomi Watts.
Yeah, they had to put that in there because the character models that they changed were York's character model and George's character model, because George was modeled after the sheriff in Twin Peaks.
Okay.
I don't know his name, but that bland.
Yeah. I know he's got like the fluffy hair.
Yeah, so him. I don't know. What they ended up doing was they used George's original character model, and then they renamed him Richard and made him work in the bar. So they just recycled it.
Oh shit!
And for York's original character model, what they did was they blacked out half his face and then put him in flashbacks and made him York's father. So clever.
That's so funny, because when I was like watching these scenes, and I was just thinking, like, they have no reason to keep these characters as unknown. Like, why are they giving them a black shadow across their face? And I couldn't think of any reason. So that's quite hilarious.
I thought it was sort of a stylistic choice. Like, if you think of it, do you really like? And if your parents died when you were quite young, would you really have a?
Would you actually remember?
A vivid memory of what they look like. So the shadow kind of makes sense, because I think
I guess
slight spoilers. Agent York's parents died when he was little, but that's more of a backstory thing, not a spoiler thing. So
yeah.
Anyway, interesting fun fact. On the graphics, we should talk about this some more, because some of it looks terrible.
Yeah, so from the PS3 Director's Cut version, I'm guessing it's going to be the same in most versions. The frame rate is terrible. The graphics are... they're just very basic. The trees are constantly repeated, and you see them just lag in and out of view if you're driving. The actual, like, view distance is terrible. And... oh man, there's like reflections from the water, how it is just one big piece of aluminium foil. It looks so shit. Yeah. I can't state how bad they are.
Since I played the Switch version and the 360 version, I can't comment on the PS3 version, but I've heard that's one of the worst out of the lot. But I can say comparing the 360 version to the Switch version, the 360 version is by far superior, which is really surprising. So if you want to experience the game in its best graphical scenario, play it on Xbox 360.
Okay, so it sounds like Xbox is the way to go. Although, I'm going to guess that most versions are still going to be pretty damn bad.
I think what happened was they made the original version, and then they went and they made the director's version for PlayStation 3, which was kind of a rush job, and... they had to, I don't know if it's because it's different hardware or whatever, they made some sort of shortcuts, and performance on the PS3 version is so shitty. Well, it's just shitty, full stop.
Yeah.
And that's the version that they used for the Steam version and partially for the Switch version. So I don't know why they didn't go back to using the 360 version.
Why would they do that? That's so strange.
I don't know. Maybe it's a cost-cutting thing, but they basically... had the original game, made a shittier version of it with additional scenes, and for some reason used the shittier version as the template for the next few versions. So I don't know, but the graphics go from looking pretty tolerable to me to looking like absolute dog shit, and especially like the cutscenes themselves are really compressed and pixelated as fuck.
Yeah,
something you got to live with.
I think if you can stand the game for all its shitty graphics and frame drops and stuff, then it's okay, because the story's good enough and compelling enough to keep you in. But
yeah,
if you're the sort of person who really has to have like a solid 30 frames per second minimum, then you're going to struggle with this game. It's going to hurt your eyes.
It's not the game for you.
It really isn't.
Although. The graphics do have, I guess it's not really the graphics itself, but rather the art style has its own sense of charm where it makes up for that. And when you combine that with the soundtrack, it kind of, this game is greater than the sum of all its parts, I think. So
I think that's true.
At least in my opinion, you probably hate it, but I love this game. But the soundtrack is pretty special, and there are some tracks on there that slap.
Oh, man. I did enjoy the soundtrack, actually. That's definitely one of its strong points, for sure.
There's one track which I think is called, like, Happy Whistling or something like that.
A Beautiful Life, I think.
Oh, that's it.
It's just got a charming little guitar and a whistling song. Oh, it's lovely.
I can't even think of what the tune is, but every time that song would come on, I would whistle along with it. Like, it's so catchy. That's it. Now it's going to be stuck in my head.
It's honestly just playing in my day-to-day life now.
Yeah, I would add that to my soundtrack of my life if I could.
I think I love the main theme, the I can't remember what it's called, the Goddess in the Woods. The one that plays like when you load up, the acoustic guitar kind of theme with the humming and stuff.
Yeah.
That's really nice, and it plays quite a lot. And although sometimes the melding of song to song is very disjointed, and sometimes it can go from a very serious situation to a comic jazz music, mm-hmm. there's something quite charming about it. It is funny.
It's really funny to me because the there are a lot of sort of comedic, goofy tracks, and it catches you off guard because further along in the story where it gets really dark, there are some really moody soundtracks.
There are definitely some emotive tracks.
Yeah, and like you're not really expecting it because you're going from the whistling song to, you know, other goofy music, and then all of a sudden there's like some really dark and moody shit happening.
Yes.
And it works really well. So aside from music though, we have to talk about the voice acting.
This is one of those things which I've heard people say it's terrible. I don't really mind. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. I think
all right,
York
I thought you were
going to
say it was
job.
Terrible. No. I love York's voice actor. It's hilarious. He's so good for it.
I don't know if it's like it kind of it reminds me of like the old PS2 days where the voice acting is like only slightly off, but you're used to it. But here, stylistically, it works so well because it's kind of like this, you know, goofy, off the hilt world, and all these people in it sound like they belong there, like. York is nutty, and everyone he talks to, like the crazy pot lady, she she's sounds exactly what you would think a crazy pot lady would sound like. And by pot, I mean like cooking pot.
Yes, like she literally carries a cooking pot around.
Yeah,
which is obviously kind of based off of the log lady from Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I'm glad that you know who she is.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean York character himself, his voice is so smooth. Like, smooth the word I'm looking for? Understated, perhaps. It's slightly, the things he says and the tone he says it can be condescending and inappropriate, but also it works so well, and it
you like
York as a player, I think, even though the things he says can annoy the people he's with.
I actually ended up getting a crush on York. Halfway through, I'm like, damn, this guy is fucking sexy. And like, he also doesn't look like classic heroes. He's got like a really fat upper lip. And I'm
just like, he is very distinctive.
The most charming smile you'll ever see. So I started growing to really love York.
I particularly liked how the smile just appeared at the most inopportune and random moments. It's so funny.
It's like, I mean, you add the voice to the character model and the really stiff animation, and it kind of has like this mannequin kind of vibe to it.
Yes,
and this
mechanical kind of
movement. It works so well. It's like animatronics. It's, I don't know, I loved it.
His voice manages to be robotic and full of emotion or character at the same time.
Yeah.
It's quite a talent. Good job, Jeff Kramer.
Yeah, he voices a second character as well towards the end of the game. And the changes in the tone of his voice are so subtle and really effective that like he does a bang up job. He's really, really good. And I could not think of anybody else doing York's voice other than Jeff Kramer.
Yeah. And they've got him back for the sequel. So.
Thank God.
Otherwise it just wouldn't be the same game.
Yeah.
Just get Troy Baker in and he can fuck it up.
Oh God. No.
Can you imagine? Oh man.
I would never buy that game if Troy Baker was in it.
Nah.
Next thing you know, it probably is in it as like a bunch of side characters or something. But
yeah, just get him, Nolan North, and Laura Bailey, and there you go. Just the usual three.
I actually love Laura Bailey for some other characters she does. Like, that's another discussion. Going off track.
As far as the voices go, they're all pretty good. Even the side characters. Is it Keith? The rock dude from the shop.
Oh yeah,
he is absolutely hilarious. At first, I just found him annoying and thought, like, why the fuck have they made this guy so over the top and stereotypical? But yeah, it's so funny. Literally just talks like Bill and Ted. It just seemed to me like they wrote down typical characters that you might get, and then they just decided to make all the side characters into these over-the-top versions of all these things you find in series or whatever. So they had kind of one of each base covered. And it was a little bit ridiculous, but it works and it's funny.
Yeah, and the game does a really good job in expanding all the characters as well. So you think that they're just these one-dimensional people, but there's a mechanic that we didn't discuss, which not very many people make use of, but you can go around and peep into people's windows and you get to see like side scenes, basically. Yeah. Did you experience any of those?
No, I didn't, but okay. I read a retrospective explanation of the game, and it was talking with the developers actually, and I know that they put a huge amount of effort into this. Like, for Thomas, one of the characters, they had a full-on routine where you could go peek in his window and you could see that he goes to the bathroom and like shaves, washes, cooks, makes dinner, all to a set routine.
Yeah.
And I think they did this for pretty much every main or side character. And that's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah.
Even if it's probably not going to get appreciated by most players.
There's these... So the two guys that work at the darts bar, Richard and his son, Quint, I think? Or Quint?
Quint.
So the father has a crush on... Is it Sally, the mother of Anna?
Oh, right,
died. Yeah, certain times of day, like, you go to Sally's house and she's there, like, binge drinking and basically crying and sobbing and stuff. But you'll see Quint and Richard, like, pop in and out and, like, bring her food and stuff. Like, they have these set routines where they're caring for her. And then, like, you talk to the characters and you go through these side quests and stuff. And then you find out more about their backstory and how Richard's always had a thing for Sally and blah, blah, blah. So, like, they've actually done quite a lot of, fleshing out of these characters' backstories. So, like, an A-plus for me.
So, when you played it, did you do a lot of that? Peeking in the windows, looking at the other stories?
Well, yes and no. I've only done it a handful of times. But I knew that it was there for a lot of the other characters, but I was more focused on trying to get the game finished and then get the achievements for it. So if there was an achievement for peeping in the windows, I wasn't going for it. There is a character, though, Diane, who is a bit of a, shall we say, loose lady.
That's a nice way of putting it.
She gets some gentleman callers that you can peep through the window and see her chatting with. I think there's like maybe two or three different people you can see pay her a visit. Like, you don't see them like slapping, but you pick up on the romantic connections she has in the town, which is to say quite a few.
Yeah. And that actually does get like, that is dealt with in the story or considered in the story.
Yes.
At least some of them, maybe not all, who knows how many she had.
She was a traveling lady as well, so she could have a man in every town.
Well, good for Diane.
On your Diane. Okay, so I think we've given a pretty good opinion on what we liked and what we didn't like. Is there anything else that's popping into your mind at the moment that we haven't discussed besides that dog thing?
Oh, by the dog thing, you're talking about the mission where you're with Forrest and you kind of have to just follow the dog around, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that the scenes in general where you kind of have to either run or drive somewhere in a set routine, like you have to follow... At one point, you have to follow Nick in a car and you can't get too close and you can't get too far, but he drives so slow and he has to go so goddamn far. And, you know, it's not that bad. But the fact that my fucking game crashed after it meant I had to do it again. That was more frustrating. The dog thing is a bit ridiculous because I'm sure he goes around like the really longest way around the village to get to where you have to go. And after like 100 yards, you have a cutscene where you talk to Forrest, and it's just like, why?
There's like six different cutscenes where you just stop and have a conversation with Forrest, and then it cuts off to another character in another place, and then they have like another 3-minute conversation, and then it's back to you following the dog. It is so annoying, and my game crashed on that on the Switch.
Oh, no.
3 times. So, yeah, I hated that section so much.
Oh, man, I've thought of another thing that is absolutely shockingly bad, and that is the hiding scenes.
Oh, yeah. There's only, like, 3 of those, so it's not
there's
too big
3,
of a deal for
but
me.
They make a statement because they're just so stupid. I don't even want to talk about it, man. It makes me angry.
All right, I'll talk about it.
Okay.
So, like, in the other world, you're being chased by... well, it's not the chasing scenes. It's the raincoat killer is there. And then you are basically in a room, and then he's like chopping his way through the door with an axe. And then you're given a short amount of time to find a hiding place. And you basically just pick wherever and you sit there and you wait until he breaks in through the room and then walks around. And then at certain points, you have to just press a button prompt to hold your breath so he doesn't find you. And it goes on for like maybe 3 or 4 minutes. It's annoying. You're just sitting there watching and then waiting for the button prompt and press the button prompt.
That's the thing. I wouldn't mind it if I could just kind of put my controller down and just wait for it to be done. But I have to stay focused. Otherwise, I have to repeat it because I've missed the breathing prompt. Ah! At least there's not many of them.
Yeah, there's not very many. But on the flip side of that, there is... I really appreciate that the game lets you skip all the cutscenes if you want. Yes. So, on my second playthrough, and every time it crashed and I had to replay a section, you can just press start and then that entire scene is just over and done with really quickly.
I am incredibly grateful for that.
Yeah.
And you can also skip a lot of the tiny little scenes like getting out of a car, for instance, which it doesn't take too long, but you have to do it so often that you can just skip it.
Yeah.
And it might save you like 2 seconds, but it all adds up.
I think the only thing you can't skip is these short scenes of York going through a doorway, but that's only a couple seconds as well.
Yeah, but if you run through them, it's a lot quicker.
If you run through them, it goes really quickly. If you're stationary and you just press the button in front of the door, it goes for like 2 or 3 seconds watching him slowly open the door and walk through. So I try to run through every door.
There is a lot of door opening.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all that stuff. Would you recommend the game? Like, give me summarize your thoughts for me. Like,
okay,
did you like it overall?
Well, thinking back now, I had a good experience, and I am definitely going to remember the game. I'm definitely glad I played it. I loved the story and the characters. It's definitely one of the most unique games I've played with some incredibly memorable characters. And as the leading man, York is maybe up there with one of the best just for being purely so quirky.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether the story and character elements really balance out with the fact that mechanics and graphics and stuff are just so bad that like the gameplay itself is just generally unenjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether I'd rather just recommend someone go on YouTube and watch a Let's Play of the cutscenes or something, just so they hear the story, than to play the game. So I'm kind of neutral. I'd say maybe. I think I'd give it like a 5 out of 10.
Okay. That seems fair. I, on the other hand, love this game. I thoroughly enjoyed it so much that I played and completed it twice this week. I love the story. I love the characters. York is probably one of my favorite characters now, and I'm probably going to play the sequel when it gets patched enough that the bugs aren't going to bother me. The gameplay itself, outside of the other world, I didn't have too many problems because I could kind of switch my brain off. The other world shooting sections were really boring and tedious. But it's like I said earlier, I think the game is greater than the sum of its parts. So the characters and the story make up for that. And there's a reason why we haven't been discussing the story in too much depth, and that's because it's very spoiler heavy. And I think the enjoyment of this game comes from experiencing that yourself. But like you said, I think watching a Let's Play, you could probably get just as much of enjoyment from it than playing it yourself. Or if you watch like a sort of story breakdown or something and you don't care too much about playing it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure somewhere on YouTube you could probably find all the cutscenes or some sort of like retrospective. Yeah. So I recommend doing that for the story. But if you're one of those people that need to experience it for yourself while playing it, go and do that. And if you have access to the 360 version, do that. I was under the impression it had backwards compatibility with Xbox One, but apparently that's only region specific and not available in Australia. So check if it's available in your region, because you can probably buy it from the Microsoft store. But yeah, loved it. That's my opinion.
I would just say I love the story. It's worth experiencing, but I definitely didn't love it.
Okay, fine. If you had a Switch though, would you be game for playing the second game?
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more of York and Zach. So if they've improved any of the really bad mechanics, then it could be worth it.
I think I will give it a go eventually, but I'm going to wait till it's a little bit cheaper. Part of me is like, I want to buy it to support them so we can potentially get another game. Mm. But the other part of me is like, I'm unemployed right now, so maybe I shouldn't buy a new game.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's leave it there for that. And do you want to discuss spoilers? Because this would be the perfect time to say everybody who doesn't want to, who wants to play the game, tune out now, go and get it. And then we'll talk about the spoilers from here on out.
Yeah, let's commence spoiler talk.
Okay, so this is your warning. If you wish to play Deadly Premonition or watch a breakdown of the story on YouTube, go and do that now. And then come back and then we'll discuss the juicy bits.
Yeah. You know what? In the show notes, we'll put the time when we start talking about spoilers, just in case.
Yes, good idea. Where should we start with the spoilers? Okay, so it's really hard to talk about this without going into specific details about everything. The reason why Anna was killed all comes back to the red seeds, which were found not only in her body, but in other cases that York had investigated around America. So the red seeds all connect between all these different killings. And the reason for that is that these seeds apparently have supernatural properties. So the raincoat killer has been killing these girls and then using them as a ritual with the red seeds to gain immortality. And Anna was involved in that because her and her best friend Becky were basically seduced into this sex club between her, Diane, Carol, who is also Thomas's sister, Thomas, who is one of the, who is the sheriff's secretary, and the sheriff, George, are all in this like sex cult thing. And the raincoat killer is George, who is killing off the girls one by one and then using their bodies for this red seed ritual.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
There Got we it. Go. Yeah. So obviously the whole process of the game is working out the identity of the raincoat killer, finding out who's going to try and target next and what the hell these red seeds mean. And you do kind of learn all of this. Takes a bit of a time and you have to put some things together. But I was wondering at what stage you suspected George when you were playing.
When I first started the game, I think I suspected him based on the fact that he was so ugly. But then, if I'm going back to the very, very first time I played this game, I thought that the killer was actually going to be the helper of the rich guy in town, Harry. So there's Harry.
Is it Michael?
And yeah, Michael. So Michael is the guy who like pushes Harry around in his wheelchair and stuff. And he just seemed really off. So I was like, that's the killer. Like I picked him and I thought it was going to be him. And then I accidentally spoiled myself because I read a wiki. I saw that Thomas was involved. And then I just immediately assumed that Thomas was the killer. So I was playing the game this time around thinking, okay, Thomas is the killer. Which he's not. He's involved. So I was caught off guard when it turned out that he was only doing things on behalf of George. Because I thought I had spoiled myself and then took what I'd read to be gospel and thought that Thomas was the killer. Looking back on it now, there were so many clues. Like, George's number plate on his car says he's the one.
What? Man, okay, I missed that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love the number plate on, I think, York's car, maybe one of the police cars, is like Spy Fiction or something.
Yeah, that's kind of and irrelevant. There's one that's like, I love MOV, which I think means movies. I don't know.
Ah, nice little features there. Yeah. When I first started playing, I actually thought Thomas, based on nothing other than the fact that he was kind of a side character that you were given a little bit of depth about, but not too much. But then as soon as you go into that one mission in, I think it's Diane's, where George is the first one there and he's a little drunk or something, where York says, George, you don't seem yourself. And George is like, I've just had a drink because two people have died, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that just seemed a little bit too off. And then when he takes you to have a little discussion about his like markings on his back and how his mother treated him.
Yeah.
That was kind of like, yeah, this dude's he's hiding something. And
you know what? I did suspect him. And it's the part where Becky was tied up and then George pushes Thomas aside to cut the wire.
Yeah.
And intentionally kills her.
Yeah.
That's when I knew it was him.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, continue.
but to be fair to the game, the story does just throw you so many twists and turns that you are kind of almost expected to suspect every other character at some point in the game. Like, yeah, this person's the killer. It's pretty... I mean, it's a common feature of detective things.
They throw clues to you about everything and you kind of sort of dismiss them and pay attention to certain parts of the story and then forget about the initial clues, because then it winds up that George isn't the big bad at all. It's Forrest Kasson. And then,
yeah,
like,
it's true.
Very, very early on, York is looking in his cup of coffee, which he apparently has psychic visions from or something, and it said FK, which stands for Forrest Kasson.
Yeah, although I still couldn't see a fucking thing in that coffee, so...
Yeah, me neither. But apparently it said FK, and then that was, like, really early on in the game, and then a bunch of significant things happened after that, so you kind of just forget that that even happened, and then the initials aren't really registering as an important detail at all. You think it's just this goofy thing.
I really think that it actually has quite a bit of replayability in that aspect. Like, you could go back,
it does,
just to kind of fully appreciate all the scenes and realize what's going on and who's doing what and for why.
There are certain sections where, like, Thomas, when they get to, I think it's Becky's crime scene after she's died, he ends up vomiting. And you think it's because he's really weak-willed and all that sort of stuff, but it actually winds up that the reason why he's vomiting is because of the guilt of him being involved in these murders. So there's, like, all these sort of aspects going on behind the scenes that, like, once replaying certain sections, they make sense. And there's even a part where, like, you're in the sheriff's office. If you go into the boiler room, you can find Thomas there acting really strange and kind of, like, dissociated from wherever he is. He's just kind of mumbling, which was, like... reinforcing my, yeah, like, he's just, like, walking around and mumbling a bit, and you're like, okay, that was me thinking, okay, he's definitely the killer then. But then it turns out that Thomas's way of dealing with things, well, I should explain, Thomas is gay, obviously, because he walks like a lady. His sister Carol is the singer in one of the bars. So him and his sister and Diane are involved in this sex thing with George, and because Thomas is gay, he dresses like a lady, so George will basically sleep with him. So he kind of has, like, this relationship with his sister where he wants to be her, because if he can be a woman, then that will mean that George will love him the same way that he loves Emily, because George is in love with Emily. So he dissociates and then starts, like, basically thinking he's his sister. So it's this whole, like, Alfred Hitchcock psycho thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
It was really good, and I wasn't expecting it. Because it's obviously heavily implied, there is no subtlety at all about Thomas's sexual preference, just his manner and his form that they've given him, which I think is quite, I don't know, it's a little bit ridiculous. It's over the top, but yeah, whatever, it is what it is. But the story of him and his sister is really good.
Yeah, it's so fucked up.
Very good. It's very fucked up, and yeah, we should talk about the Raincoat Kid, I guess, the whole history and who and what the old one and the new one is. So you learn that there's a At first, I think George tells you about the raincoat killer, right?
Yeah, that there's a folklore slash myth in the town about the residents going out in the rain. So nobody goes out in the rain because of this old thing that happened, which you can tell them.
And I'll try my best. So George tells you about this tale about this dude. Actually, no, it's Forrest. Is it Forrest who tells you about the raincoat killer?
No, it's Harry.
Ah, fuck, man. It's too many
characters.
All
right, fine, let me take it.
Yeah, sure, okay. Man. I think you're better at the story of this.
So basically, the old rich guy in town, Harry, about 50 years previously, there was a military experiment where Forrest Kaysen made this gas out of the seeds from the red tree. So this gas was spread through the town while it was raining, which ended up driving all the townspeople crazy, and they ended up killing each other. So Harry's father was the first original raincoat killer, because he was the strongest one out of everyone in the town, and he killed the most people. And then ever since then, the town apparently sort of just forgot about it, but the gas is still in the soil of the town because it was absorbed the night it was raining. So every time it rains, it sort of kicks up this gas again and drives people nuts. So there's this thing about the town where every time it rains, people just stay inside because it's become part of the tradition. And then over time, they've just forgotten the reason why. So this is told to George by Thomas, who finds some information from the military experiment, because the old sheriff before George did his own investigation and had a file hidden in the sheriff's office. Thomas finds this and then goes to George, then tells him about it and the red seeds. And the reason why it's even on their radar is because George wound up finding this deer when he was hunting, who had been eating the red seeds, and he noted that it took him a lot of bullets to take the deer down, like it was superhuman.
Yeah.
So that then they were like talking about the seeds because it was in the deer's stomach or whatever, and then Thomas heard about it, found the file, and then told George about it, and then something in the file said that there was a George then met and spoke to Harry. No, not fucking Harry. Forrest. Forrest Kaysen, who told him about the ritual where if you kill all these people and then consume the red seeds, you become immortal.
Yeah. It's like you kill these four goddesses and then you will become immortal.
But then it turns out that it's all a lie anyway. Forrest was just making it up, because Forrest is apparently like this embodiment of evil or some sort of demon thing.
Yeah.
Some sort of non-human entity who is linked to, quote-unquote, the red tree. And then he goes around and then puts red seeds in women and then makes it grow out of their womb. And then these red saplings pop out. And then he goes around and sells the saplings.
Yeah, very early on when you first meet Forrest, he gives you a sapling and he's like, I'm the only one who can make these grow. I've just got the technique. And you kind of just bypass it as a sweeping statement that doesn't really need any more thought. When you think back to it, it's like, holy shit.
And then he puts the sapling inside of Emily, and then it's growing out of her stomach. Man.
I wasn't expecting that. I was sad. I wanted Emily to live.
I was very upsetting. Disappointed.
Yeah.
But in the end, they kind of get a good ending anyway.
The way they've done it is nice. Yep.
Yeah. So even though people have died, they still are happy in these other dimensions, because there's like the red room and the white room. Which are kind of, I don't fully understand what they mean. I'm just taking them as like metaphorical purgatory slash afterlife things. And my interpretation. Yeah. And my interpretation of it is because York has a connection to like the other world that he is able to go there and visit there. But regular people can't do that.
Yeah. Or it's just completely in his imagination.
But I don't think it is, because Forrest knew
Harry can also be like in this white room.
Yeah, and I think that's because Harry was originally there when this whole experiment thing happened. So because he's linked to the gas, he has some sort of connection to this other dimension as well.
Yeah.
It's complicated, man. It's so complicated.
So let's talk about Zach and York.
Yes, the best twist of all. Take it away.
Okay. So, as we've said, you are Francis York Morgan, and you talk to your kind of imaginary friend, Zach. And as I was playing, I was thinking that York was actually talking to the player I don't know if you thought the same thing. It definitely seemed like that at times. Like, what do you think, Zach? And then you had to answer a question. Yeah. But when you fight Forrester, when Emily has this sapling, you get the choice to either shoot Emily, shoot yourself, or shoot Forrest. And I chose shoot Emily, but basically Francis York Morgan will not do it. And after Emily then pulls the sapling from herself, in doing so killing herself, I think that's kind of when York
actually happens before that.
Shit, man, I'm really not good at telling the story of this game.
It's all right.
You can go ahead.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'd rather be correct than just completely out of time and in illogical order, like what I'm clearly remembering.
Okay, so Forrest basically abducts Emily, and then York goes to find her. And then it turns out that Forrest is the one that is responsible for the death of Francis Zach Morgan's parents.
Fuck, man. How did I not remember to put that in?
So, Francis Zach Morgan has a flashback to the time when his parents died, and at that time, Forrest basically, like, the kid was like, I don't know, 4 or 3 or like some really young age, and then
wait. Before we say that, we should also mention that there's a scene earlier on in the game where where Emily comes to visit you in the hotel room, and she asks you about Zach, and York tells Emily about how his parents, how they died, how York's father killed his wife, York's mother, and then himself.
Yeah.
So then when you get to the scene with Forrest and Emily later on in the game, that kind of gets explained a bit better, if you want to go over that as you were.
Yeah, so the real way that his parents died was that Forrest Kaysen had put a sapling in York's mother, or Francis Zach Morgan's mother, and he witnessed this as a kid, and his father was given the option of killing her, or killing her to put her out of her misery, or watching as a sapling drains her life, and he couldn't kill her, so it ended up like turning her into a husk of a person. And the kid witnessed this as he's like a toddler. Then his dad eventually kills himself because he's obviously very distraught about what's happened. And then Forrest trains his attention onto Zach, and he does something, like swipes at him or does something to him, and then winds up giving him this slash across his face. And then from that point on, Zach goes mentally into this white room where he's introduced to York, who is this other personality slash some sort of angel figure. And Zach's hair turns white because this encounter, for some reason, has changed his hair, which is also a throwback to Twin Peaks, because Laura Palmer's father's hair goes white at one point in the show through fear or stress or something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so probably not up to that part, but that's a throwback to Twin Peaks. So anyway, basically York introduces himself and then says, I am you and you are me, and don't worry, I'll take over. And so York then is in control of Zach's body from then on. And York has brown hair. So you're playing as brown-haired York, and that's what the character sees. But in the real world, the people around him are seeing the white-haired Zach with the scar on his face. And there's this thing really early on in the game where he talks about how his encounter with this chick, the criminal, he ended up getting a small scar. So he's got this tiny little scar on his cheek. And then he's talking to these townspeople who reference him as Scarface. And he thinks to himself, it's only a tiny little scratch. I don't know why they're calling me Scarface. But if you look at York's character model, he's got this like piece missing in his hairline, which is where the scar lines up for Zach. And it goes through his eyebrow and through his hairline. And I thought that's just like a quirky character model. But when you actually see him as Zach, he has this full-on scar across his face. So yeah, the whole time when he's referencing Zach as York in the real world, he's actually referencing York, and he is Zach, but York is in charge of his body. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So eventually York gives him control of his body back, and then allows him to have the choice of shooting Emily to put her out of her misery or not. And I think you are supposed to make that choice, but either way, you can't, like, you don't end up doing it. And she ends up killing herself by pulling out the sapling. But one more thing. So, Jeff Kramer voicing both Zach and York. I mentioned earlier his subtlety of his voice changes. So, York has this, like, tone about him that's kind of, like, not necessarily arrogant, but, like, sort of, like, on the spectrum a little. Like, you know, socially awkward disconnected.
Definitely. I was going to say about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he's talking as Zach, he actually sounds like a real person, like a thinking, feeling person who is experiencing a traumatic event. So yeah, great job doing that. And the twist is that Zach and York are separate personalities in the same body.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Cool twist. Emily does die. Pretty gruesomely.
But York separates from Zach and then hooks up with Emily in the afterlife, which I think is really nice.
I absolutely love that. And the scene with them all in the woods is, with the music, is profoundly sad, but also quite joyful at the same time.
Mm.
I love how Zach is like, so York gets the girl. It's nice.
Yeah, and then the twins are there as well, who can see York and all the other girls. There are a few, like, subtle hints to the kids being able to see dead people, because they talk about seeing Anna in a red dress, and York thinks he's talking about the way that she was strung up when she was dead, because the blood was dripping down her that it looked like a red dress. But Anna actually visits York and the twins as a ghost wearing a red dress, so they experienced her like that. And that's kind of like a hint that they can see the dead people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
But great story.
But 10 out of 10 for that ending.
Yeah. And the dog.
Oh, the dog.
The dog has some significance as well. So, Forest Dog Willie, which is a Dalmatian, originally had a bigger role in the game because he's supposed to be Forest's keeper. So, he is... Even though he's a dog, he is above Forest and works for the Red Tree. That was his original role.
Right.
But they had to change that for some reason or another. I think they ran out of time or money or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you look at the map of Greenvale, it's actually... The roads are in the silhouette of the dog. So, Easter egg. yeah. I think that's it.
Well, we should also mention that the final boss is with Forrest, and he turned into... At first, he's like a fucking fat orangutan.
Yeah.
Swinging around on this theater roof. And then he turned into like this kind of massive crab-like frog thing.
It's a wall crawler.
And then it's just a giant Forrest. It's very strange.
Yeah. Oh, man. Great game. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Definitely interesting.
All right, I think we've hit on everything.
Oh, well, should we mention that throughout the game, you're kind of, I think at the start of each chapter or at the end, you have a scene where you're talking to old Zach or old York, talking to his granddaughter on his chair, and at the very
specific
end,
specific to the director's cut.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I actually didn't have that in my game at all.
All right, well, what's cool, I mean, none of it's particularly impactful, it doesn't really affect much, but at the end of the game, I can't remember if it's after the credits or just after the last scene, you actually have a scene in, I think it's AG Diner, where York is there with Emily and the rest of the girls, and Zach actually appears there, like it's all light, like he's about to die or something.
Yeah.
And he talks to York, and then York says something like, Zach, did you hear? There's been reports of all these cases coming up in New Orleans. And then you have the option at the end, like, what are we waiting for? Or shall we go?
Yeah.
And so it kind of leads on to a potential sequel.
Yeah, I think that might be retconned. But...
Yeah.
They are... Only in, I think it's the PlayStation 3 and PC release on Steam for the director's cut. So, it's not even available in Deadly Premonition Origins.
All right, interesting.
But, it's important to note as well that Deadly Premonitions 2 is a prequel and a sequel. So, I think it starts before Deadly Premonition 1, and then halfway through the game, it goes after Deadly Premonition 1. So
interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious to find out how they tackle this whole York Zach thing. Because judging from those scenes, it seems like Zach hadn't had contact with York since Greenvale.
Yeah.
So they may have retconned it, but who knows? Like, I won't know until I play the game. So fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating. And from what I've seen, in Deadly Premonition 2, you can actually ride around on a skateboard and punch squirrels and stuff. So it looks
and dogs.
Quite ridiculous. And dogs. And the graphics still look pretty crap.
I think it looks a lot better, but that's fine.
A lot better still doesn't mean much.
Yeah, true. Okay, I think we've hit on everything, so we should probably wrap it up because this is a long one.
It's a long one, but I think it deserves to be a bit longer than the other ones because the story and stuff is a bit more interesting.
True. Okay, well, that was Deadly Premonition. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yep, and for the next game, I think we were going to do Ico.
Oh, yes. Is it Ico or is it Eco?
I really don't know. We'll say both. Eco. I-C-O.
Yeah.
The companion to Shadow of the Colossus.
Cool. All right. Well, stay tuned for that next week, and we will talk about Eco/Ico.
Yeah, and follow us on Twitch and Twitter, where you'll probably get absolutely nothing because we do not update.
Yes. We will soon. By the time you're listening to this, hopefully we're up on iTunes now, so we'll be back releasing some episodes and then spacing them out a bit so we have some time to take on some bigger games. But yeah, just got to wait and see, and hopefully it all falls into place.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.